4:31 here at KI. Welcome back to the Friday edition of the KI Afternoon News. Good afternoon. I am Casey Freelove. We're going to be talking a little bit about our railroads. I know oftentimes, you know, we're commuting in our cars and we see a lot of big rig trucks on the road. And sometimes we forget about the importance and really what rail means to not only our state's economy, but really the economy of the United States of America. And we're going to be joined now by Nate Kaplan, who is the California State Director for GoRail, and Steve McMurray, the Vice President of the Short Line Railroad Association. Before I get into the questions, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for being with us. How are you on a Friday? Are you guys there?
Yep, still here. Casey, can you hear me?
There we go. That little technology glitch there, no problem. Thanks for being with us, guys. Do appreciate it. And it's a fascinating topic. As soon as I saw it in my inbox, I wanted to make sure I got you guys on because I and myself, and I assume a lot of our listening audience, maybe don't think about the railroads as much as we should. Especially, I just did a report on how California has once again grown to become the world's fifth largest economy. And I know that the rails play a part in that. We'll discuss that as we go through this. But you two recently had a chance to head to California Rail Day in Sacramento. Maybe provide myself and the listening audience just kind of a gist of what you experienced there on that day at the event.
Sure, Casey. We have the California Short Line Railroad Association, which is made up of the 25 short line railroads, which are kind of essentially the retail mom and pop first mile, last mile of the national rail network. We have a local association made up of the railroad members as well as associates and suppliers to the rail industry. And once a year we go up to Sacramento and we have essentially kind of a lobby day where we get the members together with their representatives and staffers and explain all about the short line railroad industry and talk about any legislation that might be relevant to us at the moment. And then we have also guests like Nate come in and some other folks. We had some folks from Caltrans and Union Pacific and BNSF Railway as well come in and just do some general updating on legislative topics.
Now, I was doing a story earlier about how California has once again grown to become the world's fifth largest economy, and I'm just wondering really kind of how does the freight rail industry impact our economy, which is now really booming once again post-Great Recession?
Well, you know, most people don't really think about the supply chain when they're at the grocery store or, you know, at Target or something buying whatever they're getting, and most of that stuff is moving by rail, and a lot of it, especially in California, rail is incredibly important because we have 13 very active seaports on our coastline, and a lot of that stuff is moving by rail across the country. In fact, it's about 170 million tons of freight rail move through California every year, and it's a really huge number to even wrap your head around and to kind of give you an idea and to give you some perspective. If there was no freight rail in California, we'd be having about 10 million more truck trips each year going through our freeways.
That would not be good. We've got congested enough roads and enough people here, don't we, guys?
Yeah, Casey, we sure do. One thing California is good at is certainly it's our traffic.
Now, I was interested. I mean, I'm reading through the press release before I had you come on, and I didn't know this, and I'm sure some of my listeners are going to be unfamiliar with this as well, that the freight rail industry is the only privately funded transportation mode in the entire country. And that seems like a novel idea here when we're often talking about the government crunch in funds that we have. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. In California, we have two Class 1. Those are interstate railroads, BNSF and Union Pacific, and they spend a lot of money to make sure our goods are moving safely and efficiently. This year, they'll be spending about $350 million in California alone, about $2 billion over the past 5 years in our state to make sure everything's moving well. The industry itself spends about $26 billion across the country every year for the past 4 years. And so we have a system, really the safest, most cost-efficient, and most productive freight rail network in the world. And it wasn't always the case, though. In the 1970s, railroads were essentially nationalized and running under bureaucratic government control, where government officials were mandating things like routes and rates and timetables. And so they were really involved in the day-to-day activities of the railroads. 1980 was a historic year for the freight rail industry, and a piece of legislation that always gets referred to in railroad circles was called the Staggers Act of 1980, which took the government out of the railroad business and allowed railroads to operate like other businesses and to reinvest in their infrastructure and operate in areas that make sense and not where they were mandated. And now we are really sort of living in this golden age of freight rail, where we have an 80% reduction in derailments and accidents since 1980 and 43% reduction in freight rates. So something you might not expect. Not many things have gotten cheaper over the past 30 years, but moving stuff by freight rail has. And it works because the private sector knows what it's doing.
Anybody that's been to the gas station lately knows that typically things do not go down. In fact, they go up quite a bit. We're visiting with Nate Kaplan. He's the California State Director for GoRail. And Steve Murray, who's the vice president of the California Short Line Railroad Association, just talking a little bit about transportation and their experience out at California Rail Day in Sacramento. Want to talk a little bit about what you discussed with the lawmakers, because this is a different sort of animal we're dealing with. You talk about how it's privatized, which takes a little bit of government control out of it. But, of course, these rail lines go across government property every single day. What were some of the things that are kind of impacting or what you were trying to voice your concerns about when you met with the lawmakers in the capital city?
Sure. So we had, like I said, we spent a lot of time generally describing the industry. A lot of the staffers and legislators we've met with before. So we were able to kind of get down to talk about some of the specific pieces of legislation that we're interested in. We talked about several different things, one of which was it's actually Senate Bill 993, Senator Hertzberg, plan to put a sales tax on services, which, on the face of it doesn't necessarily seem to relate too directly to rail. But if you take what Nate has to say about the investments that railroads are making, railroads in general are extremely asset-intensive industries, and so these are big, heavy pieces of equipment that actually last a really long time. It's not unusual for a piece of rail equipment to have a service life of a life of 50 years or even more. So when the railroads make investments, they're substantial investments, and they're also for the long term. So when things happen that change kind of the regulatory structure, they can really have a very significant adverse impact on the railroad. So in this case in particular, a lot of the rail customers that the short line railroads in California and the railroads overall are working with are really susceptible to relocating, for example, to over across the border over into Nevada. So their business is based around services. And if their costs increase as a result of new tax on services, they can simply relocate, which obviously is going to result in loss of business for our railroads, but also increased truck traffic on the state's highways.
Now, and we're getting a lot of information out here, but it's obviously one of the things that comes down to, I assume, a core issue of this whole thing is regulation and trying to kind of balance the regulatory policy so that, I guess, A, it can stay privatized, and B, what we don't think about so much as you opened with, talking about, you know, getting these goods and services to us, to try to, I suppose, balance out what the private industry is having to pay compared to what's going to be pushed onto the consumer. That's a long-winded way for me to ask just a little bit about where we stand with the regulatory policies and kind of what you guys like and what you don't like.
Well, in general, and Nate can talk a little bit more about things on the national level, but for the most part in California, what we're really focused on is making sure that there's a level playing field between us and the different modes that we're talking about. So, for example, trucks, and that trucks are paying their fair share for wear and tear on the roadways, for example. But also we're looking for predictability. So one of the other issues, in fact, we talked about in our lobby day was some effort by the California Air Resources Board to introduce indirect source regulations where they would say that, for example, a facility such as a port has a maximum amount of emissions that they can produce. Regardless of whether there's technologies that can reduce that or not, they would implement essentially a very strict cap on these facilities. And we're opposed to that for a variety of reasons. The first is this goes against the recommendations of CARB's own staff. And what it undoes is it makes it difficult for the rail industry to invest in emissions reduction technology. Kind of the current, in a sense, the current regulatory regime is actually kind of a successful model where the industry and regulators are working together to reduce emissions. And Nate's got a lot of the statistics at hand that, that can address how successful that's been. What this does is it sort of upends that, and it makes that investment really unpredictable and potentially kind of economically catastrophic for us. So we look for kind of predictability and fairness primarily.
Yeah, I think that, that, on that note, good balance. Oh, continue, please, Nate. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Sure thing, Casey. What we also have to do is remind legislators that railroads are by far the most environmentally friendly way to move goods across the land. We get now 479 miles on 1 gallon of fuel moving 1 ton of freight.
Wow.
I always like to joke that not even a Prius gets that good of mileage, but railroads do. And we want to make sure that regulations, allow railroads to continue to operate, and we don't transfer that freight onto trucks, which pollute 4 times as much as a railroad does. So it's really important that we see the bigger picture here.
Well, one thing that everybody that's listening to this can relate to, because a lot of people are driving around in their cars, is the fact that there are a lot of big rigs on our roads. Our roads are absolutely devastated, in my opinion. Look, I travel from here to the Bay Area. I go down to L.A. all the time. And quite frankly, I'm tired of driving through potholes. And in reading through the press release, I'm seeing that there's been a push by the trucking industry to kind of increase current federal truck size and weight limits. What's that going to do to our already really ailing infrastructure? And also just the kind of congestion and you know, the way we feel when we're out there on the roads seems to me like it might not be the best idea, at least if they roll it out in full force. What are your thoughts on that?
We couldn't agree more. Right now, trucks that have an 80,000-pound limit for interstate freeways, and they're covering only 80% of the damage that they're doing on our roads and bridges at that weight. They're trying to get it to 91,000. Hmm. And at 91,000, that increased weight really reduces it to 55% of the cost that they're covering. And guess who covers the rest?
I'm guessing.
You and me.
Taxpayers.
All of us. Taxpayers are subsidizing, you know, a lucrative industry, and we don't think it's fair because we pay for and maintain all our own infrastructure. There's the American Society of Civil Engineers is that fun group that puts out the report cards on all the roads and bridges across America, and they said in California half of our roads and bridges are in poor condition with a massive backlog, and we're talking $130 billion in infrastructure repair costs across the state alone.
Wow.
So we start increasing truck size and weight, that number is going to increase exponentially.
What, I guess, and let me follow up on that question, is there a way, I mean, I'm not familiar with how the trucking industry works, but it seems to me in terms of, you know, just efficiency basically overall, whether that's time-wise, damage to the roads, or even cost to the consumer, is there a way to kind of balance it out and maybe try and get a push towards getting more of these goods that could be possibly moved via rail in that direction, or is that some sort of regulatory thing that's way over my head?
It's really up to the customer, to the shipper, on how they want to move their stuff. And don't get me wrong, trucks are critical partners for us,
sure.
Especially in the intermodal sector. You know, with those, the intermodal has been a game changer for the whole goods movement industry because you can put that same box on a ship, ship it across the ocean, put it on a train, and then you put it on a truck, first mile, last mile, as we say. But they're not really covering the cost of the damage they're doing to the public infrastructure. You know, we love to see more traffic on rail. Not only is it good for the environment, but it's good for traffic and it's good for taxpayers who don't have to foot that cost.
Well, I like that. As somebody who's a taxpayer, my whole 40 years of it, I guess, now here in California. Even when I was a baby, I was paying taxes. I kid. But, but you know, it just seems to make sense. And for my environmentally friendly folks that are listening, another offshoot of this is, of course, all that traffic on the roadways does lead to increased greenhouse gas emissions. So I'm assuming if we were able to put a little bit more of that burden on the railroads, then that could be a kind of a cause and effect reduction.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. You know, like I said earlier, trains pollute, a quarter of what freight trucks would be putting out into the air. So clean the environment when we're using rail, and the technology in locomotives is increasing incredibly fast. There's an engine, Tier 4 engine, which is going to be the cleanest burning engine in the world, that are starting to come online here in California. So these are 90% even less emissions than the Tier 3, which is sort of the standard. So things are getting cleaner and better and safer. We have positive train control, which is basically smart train technology that will be installed on every freight train by the end of 2018. That means every train will be hooked up to GPS and be able to talk to each other, essentially, and track each other's speed and distance. So any sort of human-caused error would almost essentially be impossible to occur. Things are getting safer, cleaner, and more efficient.
Let me just ask you guys another question here, because the other day I either did a news story or I read one online when I was preparing my news for this program, talking about the actual need for more people in the train sector, essentially. And we're talking about kind of the contrast between the way that we can use technology, GPS, and things of that sort to help make it more efficient and safe. But I guess my question is, there's always going to be a need for humans and people to be involved in this industry, right? Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Not only on the trains, you have humans on the trains, but also, you know, there's sort of like when you look at the command control of the flight, when they're coordinating flight patterns across the country, each railroad has a similar sort of setup. So you have anything from technology to engineers. You know, railroads are hiring, I know, in the western part of the U.S., and they're looking for smart people. And we should say, too, that hiring veterans is a major priority for the railroads. About a quarter of all new hires last year were veterans. So making sure that folks that have those sort of skills, as well as the technological skills. We're using drones now to inspect bridges, developing ground-penetrating radar that can identify any sort of problems in the track before a train gets there. The days of the old iron horse are long gone, and there's some really smart, well-paying jobs out there, you know, where you could be making over six figures with a high school diploma, and there ain't many of those left.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You just perked up a bunch of people's ears with that response for sure. I love that. Guys, I wish we had more time, but before we go, I know we've addressed a lot of different topics, and I should ask you this before I brought you on air, but if listeners are curious, just kind of with more details about what we're talking about, or maybe the future of railroads here in the West and across the United States, is there a website or someplace we could go to get more information about that?
Absolutely. Go check out GoRail, GORAIL.org. We're also live on Twitter, always putting out great news and information about the latest stuff, latest trends on railroad and infrastructure activity at GoRail. We're at. Follow us and have fun learning. We got animations. We have all sorts of fun games, even though it's very user-friendly and easy to understand.
So check out GoRail.org if you want to get some more information there, folks. And guys, I think I'm going to ask you back, because I'm going to look up SB 993 myself, and we'll continue.